our minds, going through tortures, which would, after all, would be...
Tortures? Tortures, whatever do they mean there?
Those shoes of his. Well, he puts them on once a year. There's party shoes. He'd probably pinch his feet.
Oh, you can take off your shoes now, Shuffle. Get some relief.
Good here now, young people. First, you give me a little background of the events leading up to the...
Tragedy? There isn't any tragedy, Senator.
Why, of course not. It's a comedy.
Eh? Comedy?
Say, Paul, ain't we going back to the house? I've already asked the Reverend if he can spare the extra time. He says yes. Let's not keep him waiting.
I'm afraid Mr. Peabody's services won't be needed, Mom.
Oh, Paul.
Dear friends, Faye and I have something to say to you. You've come from several cities to be with us today, and we thank you with all our hearts. Faye and I are still very much in love. Someday we are going to be married, but I'm afraid that circumstances prevent our getting married today. You see,
Paul...
Now, Ma, it's nothing to be upset about, is it, Faye? We don't feel upset. In fact,
we find it funny. In all our lives... All your lives, did you ever hear of such a romance as Paul's and mine? Off again, on again, begin again, fit again?
Faye and I never really liked this date for our wedding anyhow, did we, honey?
Of course not. It should have been on April 1st.
Oh, Faye.
And we don't want to do it this way, with bad feelings between members of the family, with this church standing empty save for you few loyal souls. We don't want to get married in an atmosphere of bitterness and dislike. In a few days, I'll run down here for the weekend and we'll see how things stand. By that time, perhaps Effie and Willie might have changed their minds about us. And you'll feel better, Ma. You won't feel the view.
Are you postponing the wedding on account of me? Oh, I won't stand for that, Paul. Are you postponing your wedding because you think that I might...
Of course not, Ma. My goodness, what gives you that idea? And will all of you kindly stop looking at us with such sad, sorrowful eyes? This is funny. This is tragic. Because of matters beyond our control, this little party has turned out to be a flop. It's not our fault. So why should we feel bad? And so Paul's going back to Washington, and I'll get ready for a return engagement to be played at this theater at a later date. That's all. Everything's all right.
Well, say something, somebody.
Hey. Oh,
hey. Sure. Sure, it's funny. Funniest thing I ever heard. Better than a zoo full of monkeys.
Shuffle, don't. And now won't all of you come over to the house and join us and all that food that's waiting? And we'll pretend that it's really a party.
And Faye wants someone to have her bouquet. You have to throw it from the steps of the church or from the car, don't you, Faye?
Sure. So come on, girls. Let's go. Come on.
We're all going back to the house. We need our coats.
I'll get you coats.
Please don't feel bad, Mom. Because look, did Paul and I act heartbroken? Of course not.
Yes, I'm sorry to get out of here.
Paul, my boy.
Yes, sir.
Stop being a bad dramatic actor and tell me what's really behind this. Obviously, the quarrel in the bride's family is responsible. Does your fiancé feel that badly about her sister's absence?
Oh, it's that, but mostly it's her mother. I don't want Faye to leave her this way with things as they are. Most of the people in town aren't speaking to her. Her own family's so bitter. How could I ask Faye to leave home now?
That's a very considerate thought. But aren't you being a little too noble, Paul? Making so much of a simple family quarrel?
I know, Faye. If we'd been married today and gone away, she'd never stop hating herself. Faye would try to be a good wife to me, but her thoughts would be back here with Ma every minute. Well, that isn't the kind of a honeymoon that I want, Senator. I've waited too long for Faye. When we're married, I want her to be all mine. Not an empty shell whose spirit is somewhere else.
Well, I suppose you're right at that. Unfortunate. Most unfortunate. Terribly embarrassing, too. Well, will you be coming back to Washington tonight?
Tomorrow, I think. Come on, Senator. The wedding feast awaits us.
Yeah, wedding feast. Yeah, too bad. Too bad. People never learn, do they? All we have in life is each other. All too soon, the dear ones pass. We ought to be nice to each other while there's still time. Yeah, too bad. Too bad. Goddamn shame.
Ooh, none of those days.
Now, some hours later, I've seen his mom's house. A few faithful friends are still gathered there. Fay and Paul have done their best to cheer up their gloomy gathering, and have almost succeeded. But Fay has noticed that one member of the family has slipped away. Fay has set out to look for the absent person. Now, we find her upstairs, just knocking on the door of Ma's room. Yes, the absent person is Ma. Listen.
Is anybody in there? Anybody here? Oh, there you are, sitting in the dark.
I just came up for a minute.
And what are you doing, Ma? Just sitting looking out of the window?
Just looking at the snowfall.
Ma, please don't feel bad. Because I don't. Really and truly, I don't.
Hush, Fay.
Doesn't matter, Ma. If you think that you're in any way responsible, you're wrong, because of course you're not. Paul and I know that.
I know it, Fay.
So please, come down and join the rest of us, Ma. Maybe you think I don't understand your feelings, isn't it? What's going through your head? You feel as if the whole world collapsed. Willie and Evie not speaking to you. Evie trying to hurt us as much as she can. The wedding of your other daughter called off. Well, you feel as if the one thing you lived for, bringing us kids up and giving us a good home and making us happy, and with love for each other, you feel as if that's just gone away and that you failed. But you haven't, Ma. You never lost faith in yourself or faith in what you've done before. Evie can't take all that away in one minute, can she? Please, Ma.
Why didn't Paul and you come back to the house and get married like we wanted? At least I'd know that part of it was all right.
But it's all right anyway. We'd rather have it this way. Ma, all I can think of is an evening just like this about a year ago. It was snowing, and I was lying on my bed crying. Paul and I had had a fight. He was going to marry Cynthia Allen. And you came in and talked to me and told me that all bad things pass away. You told me about the snow, and how the day before I was born it started to snow, and how you lay in your room all that night looking at the snow falling, wondering about this child you were about to give life to. And as you talked to me, you held my hand, and pretty soon I fell asleep. Remember?
Yes, I remember, Faye.
And you were so right, Mom. Bad things do pass, and we mustn't feel too bad. The snow will come down another day, and everything will be different, and still, you'll still be the same.
Maybe I ain't such a failure after all.
Hmm? How can you, of all people, say you're a failure?
I ain't. Not when this girl here is my daughter. Fay. You was born with understanding and with gentleness and with wisdom. But you still ain't got the final understanding. You won't know that till in turn you are the mother of a daughter. Thousand upon thousand little memories, half-hidden glimpses, secret yet revealing ways, small, helpless, tender things. Big now, but somehow still as tender. Still so pitiful for no good reason. Soft sleeper in the night. but dreamer of dreams that mothers wish for in the night of labor. Child, how can I tell you what you mean to me? That's why I sit alone in the dark and cry a little for the part of me that's you.
Don't cry, Mom.
Ask. Since I have your hand on top of mine, and I can't read no hatred in your eyes.
And tomorrow, Phil takes leave of Paula, and they'll be in with her, like before. Listen again tomorrow. You know, when you hear how safe Oxidol is, this is the same thing we used to do in the old days. Tremendous break from the...
Oh, you remember the time that Dick Ross, the little girl that died on our show, and this one we were doing a recording.
Tim at the Met.
We were recording at World, and he said, and now little... I can't remember the name of the show. He was going into the lead-out. That was before we had tape show. And he said, and now we leave little... And he started to cry. We had to do the whole show again. I thought... He got into the lead out, and he felt so bad about the whole show. He was crying. He broke down and cried.
I remember one time you did that. I don't think it was the same time, but
it was at the World Broadcasting. Yeah. We had no tapes then, Chuck. We did.
Yeah.
But one time, Walt Wade and I walked into the studio, and we'd done this big funeral scene. And he pulled open the door. Oh, gee, remember they were digging the grave. And this man from the agency walked in and he opens the door, wham, like this. We had to do the whole show all over again.
Yeah, you didn't have any of
that. All that sobbing and crying all over again.
The
Psalms and
everything. Yeah. Are you going to talk a little before, Chuck?
Before we get into this.
I have, maybe all of you have certain suggestions. I have a couple that you might get into.
Certainly.
One of which is that all of us who played these things knew that they were sentimental, that they were melodramatic in many cases, but we also knew that if we played them sincerely, people believed them. Then the shows went to New York and went to California, and I had to go out for another agency to California one time when they were doing some stuff. And we had to, it was for Drift. It was still the same agent. I never got so damn mad in my life. I said, I would like somebody for this to do a Midwestern housewife for this commercial for Drift. This gal hooked the bejesus out of this part, kidded the part all the way through. And then she was playing to the other Hollywood-type actors out there, And they were all laughing. Aren't I cute and funny? This guy.
Oh,
and
true.
When they went to New York, the same thing was happening, that they didn't play it sincerely.
Well, didn't the people on either coast...
This helped kill soap operas.
Didn't they kind of look down on the Chicago...
Oh, yeah. When a girl marries Mary Jane Higby, I'm telling you, I couldn't believe it. And I came into the studio and I said, well, gee, listen, after all, I'm being paid for this, and I think it should be as professional as possible. I don't think I should... But they kidded it all the way through.
You remember Danny, whatever his name was?
No, Danny...
Married to Fran...
Danny Sutter.
He went to New York for a little while and got into some of the soap operas, and he couldn't stand it. He went back finally, but he could, because they laughed at him from being from the Midwest and all
but
this
stuff. Phil, when we went to New York for the show, remember? We got there to New York.
Yeah.
Why, I couldn't believe, every one of us, all of our homes were uprooted here.
And I wouldn't go.
That's when
I left it.
Ed Wolf said, now, they were auditioning some people for the show, and he said, now we have to have somebody from the Midwest. They can't play on the show unless they're from the Midwest. And I thought, why did they take it out of Chicago for? Why are we doing this
here?
Right. But they were, I'll tell you one thing that happened, though, Phil, with Ed and
these
the
pages
Midwest,
are numbered.
They began to respect us at CBS little
one. That's good.
And, But they used to run from studio to studio.
I was not
Bud Collier, you know, who was the announcer. He used to hold the door. They used to hold the door open so he could run from studio to studio.
Mm-hmm.
And one time, what's his name? Dave Owens.
Dave Owens. Yeah.
Well, he decided.
He's the reason I didn't go with him to New York.
Well, he decided. I won't tell you why, but he decided that we should all the Perkins cast should meet the Bad Boys.
Oh, see, see.
see?
So we'd be doing lead outs and lead in commercials. They'd be the first commercial and they'd be the last commercial. So I come into the studio and I sit down with my little script, you know, like we do in Chicago, and I'm marking it up. And all of a sudden I see Bud Collier saying, and I look at him, I'm in the closing commercial. I have nothing to do with the first commercial. He almost missed his. So he came over to me after he said, I thought you were in the opening commercial. And I said, no, but I read my script before I go on the air. I thought, well, let's face it, you're so busy running in all the commercials. Sure, he didn't know, he didn't even know that he was supposed to do the first, and I was in the end. But they did kid it.
Yeah. Well, but you see, you can't kid
you can't
the
kid
thousands
it.
Of people who
believed in
who this. Believed in
honest.
This, and they loved the
they still do
the sincere people, and then and they loved the villainesses.
Sure.
I remember one time I got a small well, it was supposed to be like a 2 or 3 shot on Woman in White, I believe it was. And I was vicious. Oh, I was one of those mean ones, you know.
Don't think they don't live.
Yeah.
And mail started coming in.
Yeah.
I was on that show for 1.5 years.
Sure. Meanest woman I ever met.
Mm-hmm.
What I'd like to do is portion
you've never
that
changed.
Part with you two, because, I mean, these people have been together for... He's great.
His voice timbre is amazingly like
Tony's. Yeah. Tony's. Yeah. I thought that
you were
but I still, I can't stop being assertive and questioning. I got to get geared down. I'd love to go over it a few times.
Just that
for...
I
got to get geared down and acting instead of...
A little more exotic and...
But anything. Pick up some of those middle fees a little bit. One of my coming down here to be directed into a part as anything else. You know?
Yeah.
Because I'll sound...
No, it's fine.
The middle fees are just mild. The first sentence sounded so much like...
You'll be
Johnny
anyway, probably.
It sounded so much like Johnny.
The first sentence... He sounded exactly... I told him he looked like... The same. So, you want me to stand too? I don't care.
Well, you can do. You
know,
you feel better.
Sure.
I walked around. I feel a little better when I'm.
We resume our story still on that thing.
Where are you starting?
The beginning.
I
and Paul, still in their wedding room, are in the vestry room of the church where we left them yesterday. Listen.
Come on, Faye. Only remember, we must act cheerful for Ma. We can't let her see that we feel badly. Otherwise, Ma'll never forgive herself. Can you smile, Faye?
Try.
Oh, Paul, I can't smile now.
Yes, you can. You can think of the love story of Faye Perkins.
Can you use just a little bit less voice? I mean,
yeah, sure,
if you can, I think it'd come off a little more sympathetic.
Good. Let me try from the top.
Okay.
And if it's still will you stop me and gear me down to it, please?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Come on, Faye.
That's it.
Come on, Faye. Only remember, you must act cheerful for Ma. We can't let her see that you feel badly. Otherwise, Ma'll never forgive herself. Can you smile, Faye?
Try.
Paul, I can't smile now.
Yes, you can. You can think of the love story of Faye Perkins and Paul Henderson. Always engaged, but never bride or groom. They want to get married, but never do. Why, we have to laugh when we think of Paul Henderson and Faye Perkins.
Oh, funniest thing I've ever heard.
Faye.
I guess that's the only hope for us, though. Let's exercise our sense of humor about this. Basically, I don't find it humorous in the least, but I suppose if you look at it another way, it is pretty funny. All right, come on. Just 1 minute until I take off my veil. Can you give me a hand, please, Paul?
Sure. Faye, I'm so very crazy about you.
Out of that, Congressman. First, we have to postpone the marriage. Then we can get romantic.
Kiss me. Tell me that someday our day is going to dawn.
In doing. If I kiss you, I'll just start crying again.
Sure, sorry. And we have to keep this on a high and personal plane of comedy. Better bring your bouquet. You can toss it to one of the bridesmaids. Tell her to watch out for the poison ivy in it.
Nice coloring.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Can we run with it again?
No.
Oh, you're fine.
No.
No, that's good coloring. I mean, you brought it up there when you're trying to cheer her up a little bit. Because this is one of these things we don't want to do too many times.
Okay.
No, yeah. But it gets...
I mean, we'll just do this little portion and work out some of these little sound effects and enter voices, and then we'll dress it in that...
Okay. Scene.
Yeah. Yeah, you want to take page four?
Page four.
They're numbered.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Don't show where you were lost.
Yeah, okay, let's...
Yeah, you better number them.
Yeah, let's number them.
I just did, yeah.
Did you number yours?
Yeah.
I didn't even think about it.
I thought about that, and I thought, oh, boy.
Okay.
I guess we used to. They never were numbered, were they?
Yeah, these were
they? No, were they
all numbered? Yeah, some of them even used to have
the number, the
number of the lines on the
all the way down.
Oh, yes, I remember
this
that.
Is,
14 page... Something, you know?
This,
I was afraid that they had
a
number of words of the whole script in there.
I regret this, though. I had all
so
these wonderful scripts, and I had all our wonderful programs in the Afro Balls.
Yeah, I still have them.
And, well, honey, when you live in an apartment, you just can't keep all that stuff.
I had stacks of scripts, too.
Yeah.
Oh,
this is where I got this.
Mm-hmm.
I had this. This is one of our first scripts.
I wish I'd saved the Afro programs because it would be so wonderful to see all the pictures of these wonderful people, you know.
I'm the only dumb bloke who saved them. I saved all the records.
Art Peterson gave me some, too, after he moved to California. And then when I moved, I thought, oh, I can't. I'd have to rent the city hall.
The time that, this was a couple years ago that Chuck called me on this script. As I say, I went downstairs in the basement. I had everything all. Remember I told you, Chuck?
Yeah.
I had everything all and this... big box down there. And as I told Chuck, I was so tired that day, I had just put the book to bed. Oh, I was dead. So I looked down and I had them all in sequence and I thought, oh, this will probably have most of the family in, you know. And I looked like that and pulled the script out, never dreaming. When I saw it the other day, I nearly flipped. I said, 1941.
You know, this the title page on this says Willie's Millions.
Yeah, that was Willie's sequence.
Oh, it was all part of
this
the...
This was Willie's sequence. This was his sequence in the show. But I picked that script out, particularly, Chuck, because Ma and Shuffle and Paul and everybody were in.
So. One other thing maybe you might bring up, Chuck, is that the script taken by itself, as we discussed yesterday, is not too clear, you know, because these... soap operas went along day by day and the rest of it. And, but all you're trying to do is to recreate the flavor of Rushville Center.
I think that this did a fairly decent job of establishing the situation here. I mean, we had a recap of what
and
a little teaser of what...
The only thing you didn't know was what was Willie and...
well,
this is something I'd like to ask if anybody can remember or maybe
reading it now on the show.
What happened?
Well, they had this.
When did they finally get married? Well, you know?
Oh, Faye and Paul? Oh, yeah. Got married in.
A couple of years later, maybe.
No, it was soon
after.
It was soon after this episode that he went back to Washington.
Had to, you know.
No, but you know, we had a terrible time.
Never, John.
Never.
Never.
We had a terrible time with him.
I came home one day, my wife was watching one of those afternoon soap operas. And there was a nun who had been in the convent and decided to come out. I can imagine even a nun being in a soap opera, as the world turns or something.
Yeah.
And I go by and I hear somebody in the soap say, or she says it, she's out because she has gynecological problems.
Oh, yeah.
I said, that's it. They've done it all. They've got a gynecological problem.
Ernest has to have doctors and everything.
You
want to take that page four
No, but
bit
here, remember that after we got married soon after this, and then Paul went to Washington, and then Arn and what's his name, Proctor Gamble, they all decided it was a great mistake because Faye was Ma's confidant, so they said, we'll have to get rid of Paul. So he was...
That was not Orrin, it was the next two, those
no,
two.
No,
Henry,
this was Orrin. No, this was
when
Orrin wrote this. And that was when Orrin was going to the Navy. He was one of his last scripts.
Yeah.
And he said, and they said, well, we'll just have... Faye is pregnant. We'll have to have Faye pregnant. I was in on that whole deal. And then we'll have Paul killed in the line of duty. He was... He was doing some...
He was already dead.
FBI work, And Johnny was so cute the day that Paul died. He went downstairs and he got a great big lily down the horse. Angles for it down there. And it had a purple ribbon on it. And he comes, it was his last shot on the show. And he came up and he presented me. I'm just crying over Paul's grave, you know, all this business. And he presented me this lily. He broke us up completely. But I said, what's his name?
George said to him at the time, he said, well, he said, go ahead. Orrin says he's going to have some flashbacks. So he said, you can keep on bringing lilies because we have flashbacks of the death scene. I don't know how many.
Well, Herb Putran did that, too, when I finally died on Woman in White. But everybody in the cast that day and the people who had been concerned with the plot, he had us to lunch at the merchandise marsh and came out, and there were Easter lilies. Oh, they were gorgeous. And, you know, cut Easter lilies. You usually see them in a pot.
Yeah.
Oh my,
oh, we
lovely.
Had a wonderful time.
Will we get a chance to go over this on microphone for a dress rehearsal, or do you have that kind of thing?
No, sure. There's I've got two 23-minute segments. So.
Part of the thing I'd like to hear
fade out.
Yeah.
Fade in, fade out.
Yeah. And I want to play pretty close to the mic, I think.
Yeah.
So I can
get our
soft.
Uh-huh. And I'll do the same with you.
And then you got a couple of sound effects to work in there.
Yeah, listen, on the sound effects. We have the, you won't be able to hear them in the studio, but just give the engineer the signal for the first one. It's the door opening.
Mm-hmm.
And when you want the second one, give him the second one.
I can do the rap on the door
in
there
myself.
That
you can do in there. I figured it would be better to do that.
Yeah.
I'm sad that we don't have a real sound effects man here to do some of these things, but...
The script was only two
lines of...
It's lucky that we didn't have sound.
We had Captain Midnight or Sky King, you know, we'd be there with...
You know what might be a kick? I was thinking about this yesterday afternoon or this morning. A lot of the people from Jack Armstrong are around town. They're now adult voices, but it might be a real kick out of... Because while Jim Amici isn't there, why... Charlie Flynn is around town.
No, he isn't. Charlie was in last week. He's in Sao Paulo, Brazil with McCann Erickson.
Oh, I guess that takes care of that. And Johnny Gannon is still here.
Sarah Jane.
Sarah Jane is still here.
Sarah Jane is still here.
Yeah.
Why don't we just put it on the thing?
And
Johnny's here. Burl's here.
I'm doing Sky King.
Johnny. I played Clipper.
Clipper.
I was the original Clipper.
I was Aunt. What was my name? Aunt Belle. And what?
Yeah, Belle. Belle was your last name.
Oh yeah.
Because Cliffy played the.
Oh, I do know. I do.
Mike Wallace was the announcer.
I played the Swedish part for a while.
Oh, he's got a wonderful Swedish there.
Well, the funniest thing is a company out in L.A. that does the Archies on Saturday. And there's the voice of Archie, which is one of those kid high Archie voices. And I was buddies back in Boston with the guy who owned the company. He was always throwing big parties after they get done with a series. And we were always invited. The first one I went to, I'm having it, and I hear this Archie voice. Mm-hmm. Saying, I'll have a scotch, or I'll have a scotch on the rocks, please. And honest to God, this is the way the guy talks. His voice is way up there. Yeah. But you look at him, and he's this craggy guy with a beard. He's about 55 years old. And in an old coat, he looks like a professor with this Archie voice.
This guy does Pepper Young, I guess. He's 70 years old or something.
The longest run I had on Ma Perkins was in the commercials.
I was a P&G girl.
Yeah.
White without bleaching. Right there.
Well, they speeded it up.
Jesus.
Yeah, because later we...
2 years.
And this was before Fogel was still there.
Yeah.
When I was directing the commercials,
I was brought in from CBS because the Hustle Bubble thing was falling on its face.
Yeah.
And they weren't getting the ratings or something. I don't know what it was. But anyway, the thing finally folded up anyway, but fortunately I stayed on. But we had a thing that was before the theme ever started that Dick used to say. They took it out for a while and they lost so much identification on things they put it back in. And it was started... For a wash that's white without bleaching, use Oxidol with its hustling, active hustle bubble suds. You remember
that?
I'll always remember that opening line.
But you remember...
So high, six shows a day.
History of the making on DVD.
Yeah, that was fun, wasn't it?
I worked with Bill on Sunday afternoon.